At the end of the day, when you spend all the money that you have providing these services, there's only so much that you can do.
A big Indian Health Service settlement for a Southeast medical facility. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, July 30th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Tok residents are not happy with a spike in prices for electricity.
If your costs go up and the demand, the energy that you're selling goes down, your rates are going to go up if you're trying to recover those costs.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Attention, Alaska gardeners. Invasive weeds are a threat to landscaping, lawns, and gardens. They can spread and harm Alaska wildlife and waterways. Potted plants, hay, gravel, and soil, even clothing and vehicles can transport invasive plants to Alaska. So learn more at alaskainvasives.org. Let's protect Alaska together. Visit alaskainvasives.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Agriculture and the U.S. Forest Service.
A controversial mine planned for an area northeast of Ketchikan just won environmental approval from the British Columbia government. Toronto-based Seabridge Gold was granted what's called an environmental assessment certificate today. The corporation is developing the Kerr Sulfurets Mitchell prospect not far from the southeast Alaska border. Seabridge still needs similar approval from Canada's federal government. It got a provisional okay earlier this month. The final public comment period for what's called the KSM mine ends August 20th. Provincial approval was granted on the same day the National Congress of American Indians released a statement opposing the KSM and similar developments near transboundary rivers. That came in support of efforts by a Southeast tribal coalition critical of a half dozen projects planned for near the border. Seabridge Gold still needs to raise much of the $5.3 billion needed to develop what it calls one of the largest copper and gold deposits in the world. The Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium will receive a $53 million settlement from Indian Health Service for about 15 years of unpaid contract costs. Now, SEARCH President and CEO Charles Clement hopes the federal agency will continue to pay its bills. KTOO's Lisa Fu has more.
The Indian Health Service pays the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium to provide health care services to about 17,000 Alaska Natives and American Indians in Southeast. But for more than 15 years, IHS failed to reimburse SEARCH for nearly $40 million in contract support costs. SEARCH CEO and President Charles Clement says contract support covers such things as building insurance, audits, electricity bills, and other compliance activities required by IHS.
We don't have a choice whether we buy insurance. We have to have an audit every year. We pay an auditor to come in and fully audit everything. And it's genuinely bizarre that they would say, you have to do this, but we're not going to compensate you for that.
The Indian Self-Determination and Education Assistance Act requires such costs be paid in full. When that doesn't happen, Clement says SEARCH has to use other revenue to pay the bills. And that means sacrifices in patient care.
We hear lots of feedback from patients, you know, about access to care and timeliness of care and formularies. And we try to resolve them and take them into consideration continuously. But at the end of the day, when you spend all the money that you have providing these services, there's only so much that you can do.
SEARCH has an annual operating budget of around $115 million. Clement says almost half comes from IHS, with the rest from a slew of grants and third-party payers like Medicare, Medicaid, and insurance companies. 2014 is the first fiscal year in more than 15 years that SEARCH has received full support payments from IHS. The two entities signed the final settlement agreement July 23rd. Clement says SEARCH will likely receive the entire payment in the fall. He says the settlement puts an end to any contentious issues between SEARCH and IHS.
I'm ecstatic. This is a big deal. I mean, to have something this big interrupting a relationship that we have with the Indian Health Service, it's hard to just overlook the fact that you have a deal and someone's not fulfilling their end of the bargain, because the Indian Health Service is really our partner. And so to have that resolved is a huge relief.
The settlement includes interest and will go into a reserve fund. Clement says Search will also use the one-time payment on deferred building maintenance, information technology, and medical equipment. U.S. Senator Mark Begich recently introduced a pair of bills requiring the federal government to honor contractual obligations made with tribal organizations. Heather Handyside is Begich's press secretary.
His two new bills will ensure that these payments are not just made at the whim of the current Senate and House representatives and president, but are going to be written into law so that they will not only be approved but also funded and won't come out of discretionary funding. So those are all important steps to make sure that this doesn't continue the same cycle that we've seen historically.
Search is one of several tribal organizations across the state that filed claims and reached a settlement with IHS for unpaid contract support. Settlements range from several hundred thousand dollars to more than $150 million. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
The Food Bank of Alaska is asking for donations after seeing a spike in users. The bank purchased nearly 40,000 pounds of bulk food, but needs more. The bank provides food to more than 100 partners that serve people in Anchorage and the Matanuska-Susitna Borough and 200 partners across the state. Last year, agencies served up to 100 people on busy days. This year, they are typically seeing 250 people, including seniors, veterans, and families. Officials say the numbers are up after a food stamp reduction and the end of extended unemployment benefits last year. Plus, more children are home during the summer, meaning they are not getting meals at school. There also have been fewer donations to the food bank this summer. Alaska Power Company customers in Tok and elsewhere in the interior are unhappy that their electricity bills went up earlier this year. And as KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, some are frustrated that they're being charged more, partly because they're conserving electricity and generating it themselves.
It used to cost a lot of money to heat Tok School during the coldest months of winter.
It was not uncommon to have bills for the Tok School that were $30,000 a month.
That's Scott McManus, an administrator with Tok-based Alaska Gateway School District. McManus says those kind of electricity bills convinced district officials they had to do something. So in 2010, they used an Alaska Energy Authority grant to build a renewable energy system that burns wood chips to generate heat and electricity for Tok School. This year, they invested in efficient lighting and put in place an energy conservation program.
We've undertaken a lot of efforts to save energy because the cost of power is so high and has taken away from our kids our ability to provide a higher quality education.
McManus says those investments have paid off. The biomass-fueled cogeneration system and energy conservation effort have cut the school's annual electricity bill by about a third. But he says those savings are being offset by Alaska Power Company raising its rates earlier this year, with another rate hike pending for early next year.
We've dropped several hundred thousand dollars over the course of the last several years, you know, to do this. And their argument is essentially because we're saving money, they have to charge more. Because we're saving energy, they have to charge more.
That's part of the reason for the rate hike, says Mike Garrett. He's the executive vice president of Alaska Power and Telephone, or AP&T, the parent company of Alaska Power Company. Garrett concedes his company loses revenues when customers use less electricity, especially big customers like the school district. It loses even more when big customers go away altogether, like the Coast Guard's Loran radar station, which shut down in 2010, and the Westmark Hotel, which closed last fall and hasn't reopened for the summer tourist season.
It's a pretty simple math that if your costs go up and the demand, the energy that you're selling goes down, your rates are going to go up if you're trying to recover those costs.
Garrett says AP&T requested an 18% rate hike last year, its first such request since 2009, to close the gap in revenues created by falling demand and rising overhead costs.
Maintaining lines, maintaining generators, going out and repairing when there's a storm, or costs associated with outages at 50 below. Those kinds of costs only get recovered whenever we do the rate case.
The Regulatory Commission of Alaska granted AP&T an interim rate hike of 6% effective last January, while it considers the company's request for an 18% increase. It'll announce its decision on that in February. The commission also granted AP&T's request for cost of power adjustments, which enable utilities to charge customers more to cover the rising costs of fuel to generate electricity. McManus says he understands the economic realities that AP&T is facing, but he says the company needs to do more to adapt to changing conditions, like phasing out its oversized and inefficient diesel fuel generators and using more renewables to generate electricity, and encouraging instead of discouraging its customers to do the same.
They have people who are willing to invest, you know, people who would invest their own money into a power system solution, as long as they were able to get something back out of it.
Richard Kemper is one of those people. He's set up a solar panel at his home in Tok, installed efficient lighting, and he practices energy conservation. Kemper doesn't like the idea of paying more for electricity, but he believes it's the price that we'll all have to pay in order to transition into a sustainable energy-fueled future.
I think that we are in a transition period from a time of cheap fossil fuel power and not really caring about efficiency as far as energy goes, and it's going to be a bumpy road.
Kemper says homeowners should assume personal responsibility to solve the high energy cost problem by investing in an alternative energy system because it's the right thing to do and because eventually it'll pay off. I'm Tim Ellis in Delta.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the sticker shock of finding good childcare.
If a spot comes open, I'm just going to have to grab it and pay $800 a month.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future, delivering oil today, sustaining operations for tomorrow.
The Yukon Quest International Sled Dog Race Organization announced the 2015 race purse today. The first 15 mushers to cross the finish line next February stand to win a percentage of more than $127,000. That's a more than $12,000 increase from last year. The extra money comes from what was not paid out in 2014. Last year's race saw only 12 finishers. Official signups for the 2015 race opened this coming Saturday, August 2nd. The 2015 Yukon Quest starts in Whitehorse on Saturday, February 7th. Southeast Alaskans can learn more about regional transportation projects at a series of meetings starting next week. The State Department of Transportation is hosting the sessions during August and September. They'll focus on the latest version of the Southeast Alaska Transportation Plan. Department spokesman Jeremy Woodrow says each meeting will have two parts.
There will be an open house that will be for 2 hours prior to the meeting at some locations, 1 hour at the smaller communities. And then for about an hour or two, the plan will be presented to the public.
Comments will be collected during the meetings. The plan calls for three large, expensive road projects. One would run north from Juneau, and another would cross Baranof Island from Sitka. The third would link Cake and Petersburg. All would end at new ferry terminals. The transportation plan also calls for building up to 2 new ferries and retiring 3 old ones. It also includes an airport for Angoon. Woodrow says presenters will talk about projects planned for each community.
We'll also talk about the region as a whole because all the communities in Southeast are connected one way or another, and so it's important to talk about how we can keep these communities connected and then also talk about what we have planned for their community in specifics.
The meetings begin Wednesday, August 6th in Juneau. They end September 10th in Haines. Sessions will also be held in Angoon, Petersburg, Ketchikan, Sitka, Cake, and Skagway. With another year of multi-million dollar budget deficits on the horizon for the city and borough of Juneau, an assembly committee is reviewing the city's 37 sales and property tax exemptions. As KTOO's Jeremy Shea reports, the committee will recommend which ones to keep, adjust, or throw out.
Through sales tax exemptions in 2013, the city gave up nearly $78 million in revenue that could have paid for city services like education, libraries, police and fire protection, road maintenance, and parks. Assembly members on the committee are well aware that this is the hard part of being in elected office. Here are Assembly members Jerry Nankervis, Kate Troll, and Jesse Keel.
If we make any changes, they're going to cost anybody any more money. They're not going to be popular. So.
This is not a popularity committee.
No, it's not.
Thank you for stating the obvious, Mr. Nankervis. We appreciate that.
With no changes, the city predicts it will be about $7 million short in the next budget year. Committee and city finance staff agreed that tightening exemptions on big-ticket goods and services is a good idea. Right now, the sales tax paid on a single good or service is typically capped at $375.
Well, I definitely agree the cap is a good one.
That's sales tax administrator Clinton Singletary.
It hasn't been adjusted since 91, so it's been a while.
Those caps saved taxpayers more than $5 million last year. The senior citizen sales tax exemption is also under review and bound to be more controversial. Assemblywoman Kate Troll says she's interested in scaling it back so wealthier seniors no longer qualify. She also wants to create a new exemption on unprepared foods.
That would benefit a larger cross-section of Juneau and actually people that probably are more deserving or needing of that exemption on food than some of our well-paid seniors.
Senior citizens saved almost $2.9 million through the tax break last year. Both the number of senior sales tax exemption cards issued and the dollar value of untaxed sales have grown steadily since at least 2006, according to Finance Department figures. That lines up with a graying trend in Juneau's demographics. The Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development projects Juneau's 65 and older population will grow much faster than the overall population in the coming decades. The Tax Exemption Review Committee meets again August 7th. Its report is due to the full assembly by the new year. Similar tax exemption reviews were last completed in 2005 and 2006. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine. First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's business dreams grow for more than 90 years. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
Governor Sean Parnell has signed legislation honoring the late Tlingit elder Walter Sobeleff. HB 217 designates November 14th of each year as Dr. Walter Sobeleff Day in Alaska. That date was Sobeleff's birthday. The bill signing ceremony was held in a downtown Juneau park, not far from where work is underway on a cultural center bearing Sobeleff's name that is being built by the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. Sobeleff's children were on hand for today's bill signing, which also featured Alaska Native dancing. Sobeleff died in 2011 at age 102. He was a respected spiritual leader, remembered by Parnell as a man who loved all Alaskans. More than 100 Juneau volunteers recently joined city and borough crews to pull weeds, sweep, hose, scrub, and pick up what some estimate to be thousands of cigarette butts. It was the first event organized by an informal downtown improvement group. As part of KTOO's series examining downtown problems, Rosemarie Alexander was also there.
I think everyone picked up cigarette butts.
9-year-old Adaira Allen was a bit grossed out by all the cigarette butts that litter downtown Juneau.
We scrubbed benches and I scrubbed railings. We picked up a ton of trash, like a lot of cigarette butts. Almost all of it was that. Ugh.
Adaira and her 12-year-old sister, Safira Keel, joined their dad, Assemblyman Jesse Keel.
Mostly I scrubbed benches and railings and stuff. I also picked up a lot of stuff, including cans, broken glass, cigarette butts.
Cigarette butt litter is the byproduct of Juneau's indoor smoking ban, despite the number of receptacles that line city sidewalks. Alicia Smith was scrubbing a butt receptacle on South Franklin Street. Her son Joel also had a scrub brush.
Right now I'm just scrubbing the lampposts down. I just wanted to help clean up downtown.
Business owner Bruce Denton came up with the idea for a cleanup as part of an effort to improve the heart of the capital city. Denton took the proposal to CBJ Parks and Recreation, which welcomed the help. The city provided tools, cleaners, buckets, garbage bags, and rubber gloves. Some volunteers showed up with their own favorite tools, and Juneau businesses donated other supplies. They met at Pocket Park and worked along Front, Seward, and Franklin Streets and Marine Way to the Willoughby District. The small army of volunteers included a who's who of city officials, a legislator, business owners and employees, a myriad of Juneau residents, and some homeless folks. Deborah Harris has been in Juneau for about a month and is living at the Glory Hole, Juneau's emergency shelter and soup kitchen. Harris was washing an interpretive sign in Marine Park.
So this morning we're just getting all the mold and the grime and everything off and scraping it up.
CBJ Landscape Director George Schaff was working in Marine Park, too. He says it's one of the hardest places in downtown to keep up.
You know, a million people come through here every year, you know, plus everything that just happens on a daily basis. So it's definitely more than we're able to take care of right now.
Mike Patterson organized the Willoughby Group. The crew found the usual trash and a lot of styrofoam. Patterson said it shouldn't require a small army to pick up litter, which ought not to be there in the first place.
If everybody does their part and just picks up litter and puts it in the many garbage receptacles we have around Juneau, then it doesn't have to get to that state again. It just takes people caring.
About 11 o'clock, the volunteers arrived back at Pocket Park, stripped off the rubber gloves, and enjoyed music and a thank you picnic for their efforts.
The last time I saw Kanakadeak Park this clean was when it was built.
CBJ Parks and Recreation Director Brent Fisher helped organize the cleanup.
If we have community support like this, we can get it done. From the city standpoint, we can't do it alone.
Fisher said keeping the capital city clean should be a community effort.
And I hope we can do this in the springtime. So get your rubber gloves, get your tools out, get your brushes, and come back.
Denton is planning another cleanup after the cruise ships leave this fall to focus on private property, including painting some downtown buildings that could use a facelift. In Juneau, I'm Rose Marie Alexander.
Mention daycare to pretty much any parent in Southeast Alaska and you'll get an earful. It's never been easy to find daycare in the region, but just recently, it's gotten much worse. KRBD's Layla Carey talked with some parents, providers, and state officials to learn more about this critical service.
Brianna Delaney is a single mom, so she has to work to support herself and her daughter. Delaney works an irregular schedule as a waitress, and she's in desperate need of reliable daycare so she can keep her job. But there's no space available. Delaney has signed up for waiting list, but
they all say they are full until September.
So what are her options in the meantime? Delaney has a few relatives in town, then there are random friends who have kids and agree to babysit, but that doesn't always work out.
There's been so many problems with that because they will tell me, oh yes, I can watch her, and then super late at night be like, oh sorry, I forgot I had an appointment tomorrow, can't watch her, and that creates problems at my work, so it's hard.
Delaney isn't alone. Daycare in the region has always been problematic, but it's hit a breaking point.
We're calling it the child care crisis in Southeast Alaska, and that's because it's the worst that it's been in about a decade.
That's Jessica Mills-Clark. She's the Ketchikan-based liaison for the Association for the Education of Young Children. On the association's website, the homepage is pretty much dedicated to helping parents who are scrambling to find daycare.
We have about 1,000 children under the age of 6, and we have about 180 licensed child care slots.
That's just in Ketchikan. The shortage affects parents throughout Southeast. According to a 2013 report by Juneau-based Scheinberg Associates, the number of kids in the capital city under the age of 6 was close to 2,500, and only 550 of those were in licensed daycare. Clark says there isn't a single reason for the shortage.
I call it a perfect storm because it's a couple of different variables. It's not just one thing that you can point to and say this is the problem.
One known problem is that fewer landlords will allow tenants to run daycares. So if someone wants to open one up, they have to own their own home.
And then licensing standards are getting tighter. They're just looking at things a little bit closer and just maybe their interpretation of the standards that are on the books kind of make it seem tighter.
That has been Kim Stacy's experience.
And this is our preschool room.
Stacy owns First City Kid Care, a child care center. Stacy says her frustration over licensing regulations is why she's thinking about getting out of the business.
I've been a licensed provider since 1995, and everything has gone great until just these last couple of years.
The biggest issue, Stacy says, is a requirement that a larger center like hers must have someone with a Child Development Associate Certificate on site. Previously, she says the state just wanted someone who works there to have a certificate, but they didn't have to physically be there all the time. Stacy has the certification, and one of her employees just finished the training, but Stacy's gotten in trouble for that regulation a couple of times in the past year. The second time, Stacy was at the hospital, so her employee was the only one at the center with the qualification.
She had run across the street to pay a bill for me, and they came in. And she was actually only gone for 4 minutes, and I got charged $500.
Judy Clementson is the region's state licensing supervisor for the Juneau-based Child Care Program Office. She says that particular regulation has been enforced for quite a while throughout the state, and notes that violations don't immediately result in a fine.
It depends on how many times they're repeated. We would start with a warning.
Clementson says that her office works with child care providers to help them comply with all the regulations. There are an unknown number of unlicensed daycare operations, and AEYC's Jessica Clark worries about the kids in places that nobody's checking up on. But the shortage has forced that choice on some parents.
You know, I still need to work. I can't make a choice about that. So I'm going to settle for a place that maybe I don't feel great about, but I feel okay.
Jessica Clark of AEYC hopes that more people in Southeast Alaska will open up childcare businesses, and those that do are pretty much guaranteed to fill up right away. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. And you can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Lisa Fu, Jeremy Shea, Rosemarie Alexander, and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Layla Carey in Ketchikan, Emily Schwing in Fairbanks, and Tim Ellis in Delta Junction. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Raven Alaska, navigating Alaska's challenging terrain, serving more than 100 communities statewide. Details at raven.com. Raven Alaska, soaring above. Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with 3 offices, 2 in Anchorage and 1 in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com.
And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
If you've served in the military, the Alaska VA welcomes you home and thanks you for your service. Enroll now for health care benefits. Yukon Kuskokwim Village veterans can enroll at the Veterans Standdown event at Bethel August 1st through 3rd at the Old Armory Killbuck Gym. Learn about VA, state, and community programs, meet with staff, enjoy a free meal, and receive free military surplus gear. Apply early at 543-6705. This message sponsored by the VA.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.